Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are on Canto 7, Chapter 15, and the texts that have been assigned today for to be covered go from text 18 to through text 21. And text 18 has a purport, and that's the one that we're going to chant responsively. And there are two more that have a purport as well, so it's rather a lot. So we can chant responsively text 18. So this is still the chapter entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Santushtaha hena varajan navartata pivarinam ayupashta jaivya karpanyat griha palayate janaha santushta hena varajan navacheta pivarina ayupasta jaivya karpanyat griha palayate janaha santushta hena varajan navate tapi varina aupasta jaivya karpanyat griha palayate janaha. Santushta hena varajan navate tapi varina Asa jaya karpanyat. Piha palayate janaha. Santushta hena varajan. Navarte tapi varana. Swachana karpanyat. Griha palayate janaha. Santushta hena varajan. Navarte tapi varana. Sarvasya jaiva karpanyat. Griha palayate janaha. Santushta hena varajan. Navarte tapi varana. Sarvasya jaiva karpanyat. Griha palayate janaha. Santushta hena varajan. Navarte tapi varana. Sarvasya jaiva karpanyat. Griha palayate janaha. I'm going to do the prayers here just because there's a huge amount to cover. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Patale Srimati Brahmapada Swami Tanamani. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Patale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarini. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Vanchakalpa Tribhyas Chakripa Sindhubhya Vachak Patsanam Pavanibhya Vaishnavya Namo Namaha. So we can do the word for word. Santushtaha, a person who is always self-satisfied. Hena, why? Va, or. Rajan, O king. Na, not. Varteta, should live happily. Api, even. Varina, by drinking water. Or pastya, due to the genitals. Jaivya, and the tongue. Karpanyat, because of a wretched or miserly condition. Griha palayate, he becomes exactly like a household dog. Janaha, such a person. Translation, my dear king, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially by the tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses. To the purport. According to the Shastras, a Brahmana or a cultured person in Krishna consciousness will not enter anyone's service to maintain body and soul together, and especially not for satisfaction of the senses. A true Brahmana is always satisfied, even if he has nothing to eat, He can drink a little water and be satisfied. This is only a matter of practice. Unfortunately, however, no one is educated on how to be satisfied in self-realization. As explained above, a devotee is always satisfied because he feels the presence of the super soul within his heart and thinks of him 24 hours a day. That is real satisfaction. A devotee is never driven by the dictations of the tongue and genitals, and thus he is never victimized by the laws of material nature. We have to go on. So text 19, I'll read Sanskrit and translation. Asantushtasya viprasya rejo tejo vidya tapo yasaha shravantindriya lolyena gyanam chaiva kuryate. So translation to text 19. Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or brahmana who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. Then text 20. Kamasyantam hi shutridbyam krodasyaitat falodayat yano yati na lopasya jitva buktva disho bhavaha. The translation to text 20. The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world, or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 3:37, it is stated that lust, anger, and greed are the causes of the conditioned soul's bondage in this material world. Kama esha krodha esha raja guno samudbhava. When strong lusty desires for sense gratification are unfulfilled, one becomes angry. This anger can be satisfied when one chastises his enemy. But when there is an increase in lobha or greed, which is the greatest enemy caused by raja guna, the mode of passion, how can one advance in Krishna consciousness? If one is very greedy to enhance in Krishna consciousness, this is a great boon. Tatra lolyam ekalam mulam. This is the best path available. In text 21. Pandita Bahavo Rajan Bahu Gya Samsaya Chidaha Sadashas Patayo Pieke Ashantosyat Patanti Adaha. And the translation for text 21, and there will be a purport too. O King Yudhisthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their position. Purport. For spiritual advancement, one should be materially satisfied. For if one is not materially satisfied, his greed for material development will result in the frustration of his spiritual advancement. There are two things that nullify all good qualities. One is poverty. Darida dosho gunam dashi nashi. If one is poverty stricken, all his good qualities become null and void. Similarly, if one becomes too greedy, his good qualifications are lost. Therefore, the adjustment is that one should not be poverty stricken, but one must try to be fully satisfied with the bare necessities of life and not be greedy. For a devotee to be satisfied with the bare necessities is therefore the best advice for spiritual advancement. Learned authorities in devotional life consequently advise that one must not endeavor to increase the number of temples and mutts. Such activities can be undertaken only by devotees experienced in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. All the acharyas in South India, especially Sri Ramunacharya, constructed many big temples, and in North India, all the Goswamis of Vrindavan constructed large temples. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also constructed large centers known as Gaudiya Math. Therefore, temple construction is not bad, provided proper care is taken for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Even if such endeavors are considered greedy, the greed is to satisfy Krishna, and therefore, these are spiritual activities. So I found it rather a lot to cover five verses in, you know, one class. So I'll make a small attempt to do so. So going from the verse that we're focusing on today, 18. So again, it's Narada Muni conversing with King Yudhisthira. And he's particularly talking about the self-satisfied person. So, and in the purport, one finds that Srila Prabhupada is equating that self-satisfied person with a brahmana. So, he gives the criterion by which one can judge a brahmana. So, that criterion is constant satisfaction. So the example that Srila Prabhupada gives, which attests to this criterion being met by Brahmana, is that of him being satisfied even if he has nothing to eat. That would be the way to test the criterion that it's been met. So Srila Prabhupada says that that perfectly self-satisfied brahmana, even with having nothing to eat, he'll be satisfied by drinking even just a little bit of water. And so this example also of the brahmana's being satisfied with even just a little water when he has nothing to eat, also gives a hint of the brahmana's tolerance of the demands of the body, and in particular that of the stomach. So, and in effect, there are three demands of the body. So, that's the demand that's related to the tongue, the demand that's related to the belly, and that related to the genitals. So this is given in Nectar of Instruction, this breakdown. So since all of these demand stations in the body, so to speak, they're situated in a straight line. so that means that the demands actually begin with the tongue up here And the control of the tongue ensures that the other two stations and the demands are automatically met or taken care of. So now, the self-satisfied Brahmana, he has to have a particular understanding to be self-satisfied. And this is expressed very nicely by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is the understanding that the Brahmana would have to have. I'm going to read the Sanskrit. Krishna Bhada Dayama, Kori Bhare Jiva Jai, Swaprasad Anodila Bhai, Sen Amrita Pah, Radha Krishna Gunagar, Prema Dakau, Jaitanya Nitai. So the Brahmana has to have this understanding. It's very difficult to conquer the tongue in this particular world that we're in. But you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordships, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, and in love call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. So, the Brahmana has that understanding that this is going to be the way to conquer this tongue. So, this means that prasad is the ally in the conquest of the voracious tongue. And indeed, that prasad for the Brahmana may be in the form of drinking water. It's equivalent. It's prasad. So that's the reason for the Brahmana's satisfaction. And so that satisfaction and happiness that the Brahmana experiences lies in his being happy in his state of self-realization and in his willingness to practice controlling these three bodily senses that are mentioned here by Narada Muni and Srila Prabhupada. So that's the position of the self-satisfied Brahmana. So Krishna gives the condition that has to be met for the happiness of the Brahmana. So this is Krishna's statement. Before giving up the present body, if one is able to tolerate the urge of the material senses and check the forces of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. So this is the condition for happiness that Krishna gives. So I'm just going to take the last two lines and read the Sanskrit. It's from Bhagavad Gita, the 5th chapter and the 24th verse. Kama kroda bhavan vegam sa yukta sa sukhi naraha. So this means that being able to meet this condition of happiness, of checking kama, which is desires, and kroda, anger, it actually also touches on two other areas which are connected they're connected to the mental image a person holds of himself and that he holds of another person. So this will influence the way the person thinks, feels, and acts, all based on the mental image the person's holding of themselves and of another person they're dealing with. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta calls this material identification by which the person is functioning. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he actually says that he gives a commentary on Nectar of Instruction, and in his commentary, he says that the mental material identification, this mental image one's holding, this it creates three urges: the urge to speak, the demands of the mind, and the demands of the body. So all three of them are actually coming from this mental image one's holding of oneself or one's holding of somebody else. So Krishna calls for a practice which resists these kinds of urges. That's what Krishna's calling for. So Narada Muni here, when he's discussing, in the next verse, he makes a comparison between two of these urges and their becoming appeased. So this is a comparison that Narada Muni makes. He says, bodily urges in the form of hunger and thirst can be satisfied by putting food in the mouth, chewing and swallowing, basically. And in the same way, anger can be satisfied by scolding sharply somebody and the reaction from that scolding. So that actually satisfies anger. So, I mean, this is a comparison he's making. Text 20. So it could appear that it's good to appease an urge, but you know, you can see the implications of appeasing the urge, especially the second one. Because if you're looking from the point of the view of the relief it brings, you could say, okay, it's good to relieve that urge. But then, you know, what happens is that it could actually be a cruel act if one is verbally beating somebody else, because that's what it means, you know, to be scolding somebody sharply. I mean, you're verbally beating somebody. And take into account the fact that that verbal beating is based just on the mental image that you're holding of someone or the mental image you're holding of yourself. You know, it's got challenged in some way. So the anger, and then you're satisfying that urge. So, you know, there's some cruelty involved too. It may bring relief, but there's some cruelty. So now this, of course, gets into the area of learned habits of thought and the beliefs on which they rest. So now there's a sequence that leads one to this point of the anger. And the basic cause, you know, to even have all this illusory thinking, you know, these mental images that one's constructed of oneself, of somebody else, and the fundamental cause, this is according to Krishna, is that natural eternal love that one feels for Krishna, it's got changed into that lust or that desire to gratify the senses. So there's been a shift. And with that shift, because, you know, we're in contact with the material world and so we're kind of at the mercy of these mental constructs we form, then that desire, that lust for unrestrained gratification, when it's not satisfied, it turns into wrath. So Srila Prabhupada, as I was looking at how he views this, he says that wrath or that intense anger, it actually reveals the mode of ignorance. And then the final step in this whole sequence is that the wrath gets transformed into that illusory thinking. So you can see it's a whole cycle that goes on. You start out with the illusory thinking, you go through the cycle or these various little steps where you're trying to gratify some sense. I mean, it could be your, you know, mental sense of yourself. It could be some, you know, trying to gratify something externally. And then that gets converted finally into the wrath because it can't get satisfied or it's got challenged in some way. And then there's that intense anger. So, and then because one's gone through that sequence, more illusory thinking happens. So it's an awful cycle, quite awful. and that illusory idea that then gets entrenched after one has gone through that whole suffering cycle is that, you know, one has the right to please one's senses. So here Narada Muni says, you know, it brings a sense of relief, you know, just to give vent to one's anger. One allows oneself to do the chastisement. So, and here's how Krishna puts it. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So it's really broken down by Krishna, this terrible cycle that one gets caught up in. And this is from Bhagavad Gita 3:37. It says, Kama esha krodha esha rajaguna samit bhavaha mahasano mahapapam vidhi enam ihi varinam. So that category of demands of the mind holds within it the lust, the anger, and the illusion. So, and accompanying that, if that wasn't enough, is arrogance, envy, and greed. So it's very intense. So these are demands in the mind. And Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he compares these demands in the minds to thugs. So, and these thugs, they're actually openly harassing the human being. I mean, it's visible. They don't hide. You know, it emerges quite clearly. You know, one wants something, or one feels that arrogance, that one is, you know, in a certain wonderful position or whatever it is. So it's a very open harassment. And because of that, you know, mental image one's holding, where one's identifying with the particular unfortunate urge, then, you know, one's completely at the mercy of the thug. So Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, in fact, says that it's almost like conspirators that are attacking the innocent jiva. So the poor soul's at the mercy of all these demands that go along with the mental constructs that one is holding. So now the reason that these thugs, they're planning and they're acting together in secret, actually, you could say also, because they're conspiring, so they're acting in secret, all these terrible thugs in the mind. it happens until a person's actually taken to Krishna consciousness, because it's absolutely essential to give the senses some engagement on the Krishna conscious plane. Otherwise, one's at the mercy of this whole sequence playing itself out. And and of course, that engagement is that form of loving service to Krishna. So it's a complete shift. It's, you know, completely, what would be the word, knocks down the thugs. They've been this, knocked away. So (clears throat) So, you know, unless that Krishna conscious, loving service to Krishna has allowed the senses to get that engagement, the senses will always be looking for objects to get attached to. And it could even be appear so harmless, like one getting attached to one's child. It could appear so harmless, but it's not harmless because of this terrible sequence that plays itself out. You know, some illusory idea, you know, this is my child. And then comes all the other things that go along with it. The child may not actually like respond to you very nicely. So then when the child's not responding to you very nicely, it means that that idea that's one's holding suddenly gets a little bit challenged because, you know, one's expecting, you know, loving response for the child so one can maintain the illusion that, you know, there's a perfect relationship there. But actually, the child is, you know, will kick and scream and resist something and disagree with the parent, or be it a very young child or even a teenager. It goes on in maybe in slightly different external visible forms, but that's what goes on. And then what happens, there's the notion that the parent's holding is challenged. So then there's going to be anger. I mean, it's, and then some sort of wrath. The parent's now going to punish their child in whichever way, you know. You can't have this or this or this, or your activities are restrained in this and this way. And, I mean, of course, there's a dutiful aspect where it's necessary, but I'm particularly focusing on how it's challenging the mental constructs and then how it leads to a whole sequence where it's not necessarily actually any kind of growth or development on the part of either entity. So the proper understanding has to be that everything, seen everything in relation to performing a service in a loving mood for Krishna, and then things get put in a proper perspective. So one's not caught in that awful cycle. So now, over here, Narada Muni, he's actually looking at one of these thugs in the mind in particular, and that of greed. So he notes that the harassment by this particular thug, the one of greed, even if it's in the form of enjoyment, so everything in the world is made available to this thug. You know, every single thing in the world can be enjoyed, you know, like, I like using myself as an example because it always helps me to understand many things. So, for instance, I have a particular mind that likes, you know, colors and shapes and forms, you know, it looks at things more from an aesthetic level. So then if I were to have every conceivable pattern possible in a garment, every conceivable color possible, and every conceivable combination of shawl that might go with a particular sari, let's say I had everything possible, and my greed may have been so intense that I had to actually, you know, explore the entire world for every single color, pattern, combination possible. Even at the end of it, Narada Muni says that thug of greed in the mind would lead to a terrible thing. What does it lead to? That even after all of that, there is actually no satisfaction. So, this is very daunting. So, I mean, it's very intense after all of that, trying to provide everything possible. The thug is victorious. No satisfaction is felt. So, now, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he puts it clearly. He says that the effects of this harassment by these thugs in the mind, they actually create distressing situations. And that's seen in the statement by Narada Muni. It's a few, one, after so much effort to bring satisfaction, it's a futile endeavor results. And this is even from trying to enjoy everything possible in the world. So, I mean, that's very painful that you discover it's been a futile endeavor after working so hard, traversing the whole world, searching out for so many things that could, you know, possibly please the senses, a new variation, and then the result, it's actually been a futile endeavor. Very distressing. So, so there's another example for how these thugs are operating, and it's a conversation between Lord Shiva and Sati, and he's letting Sati know something of what can come up ahead. So this is Lord Shiva's words. Although the six qualities of education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage are for the highly elevated, one who is proud of possessing them becomes blind, and thus he loses all good sense and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. So, this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, the third chapter. And why I'm reading this is that there's another effect that's been described here by Lord Shiva. And that is the work of the thug of arrogance. another unwanted activity results. So Daksha is the person that's been described here. He had many material qualifications. But because there was pride in his possessions, these subtle possessions. I mean, beauty is a pretty subtle possession. or heritage, it's a subtle possession. Youth, it's fairly subtle. now, because there was that pride in his possessions, and there was also some envy, he came later on to be angry at Sati's presence in at her father's festive event. So that led to a whole sequence of very undesirable things of how he behaved. So again, Srila Prabhupada is pointing to the Brahmana who's Krishna conscious. So he, in fact, has this greediness to enhance his Krishna consciousness. So, and the practice for being able to resist these kind of urges in the mind, especially for greediness, because greediness is something, and it's highlighted here by Srila Narada Muni, it's something that can assail one in even when one's taken to Brahminical life, is being satisfied with the bare necessities of life. So that's actually the antidote, how to resist the urge. One doesn't have to fight very much. It's actually really just being focused on being so grateful for those bare necessities. The greed just goes away. That thug is powerless, completely disempowered. So, and this is mentioned here in the one of the purports that we read. So, it's on the purport of text 21. So, now, to counteract these kinds of urges, arising from identifying with material objects, both gross and subtle. It calls for an austerity, and that austerity is understanding that the senses, which includes, you know, the mind, can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service, is and particularly devotional service to Krishna. So these are some words that come from Srila Baladev Vidyabhu's son that Srila Prabhupada actually quotes, which I think is so significant. And I'm going to read the words. It says the same thing. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. And those words are Namad Bhakti Prabhavena Sarvendriya Vijay Purvika Svatma Drishti Sulabeti Babaha. So Srila Prabhupada also uses another simile. He says that it's like a blazing fire that burns everything within a room. So this is that what transpires through performing loving devotional service. It's like a great fire, and all these impurities in the heart, these urges in the mind that come from these kind of illusory ideas from previous activities, and then getting the engagement that was based on those illusory activities that then led finally to the anger and the wrath and more illusory activities. All of that gets burnt away simply by engaging the senses in loving devotion to Krishna. So, and Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of a yogi or the perfect brahmana, he burns up all these kinds of impurities. So he's personally doing it. So that's in Bhagavad Gita 262 purport. We find Srila Prabhupada discussing this point. So the perfect brahmana that was mentioned right in the beginning is the one who's meditating on Lord Vishnu and is devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the aspiration and the education needed that Srila Prabhupada is calling for to be in that fantastic position where one isn't at the mercy of these most horrendous urges and the thugs that are just waiting. So those are some of the thoughts on these five verses today. I've tried to bring them together as best I could. So if there's any thought or something to expand our discussion. Sipal.
Hari Bol. Okay, it's on. I was sort of a little taken aback by the translation of text number 19. It's quite what is it like when you're giving a warning? Yeah. It's quite a warning. Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or brahmana who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanish. So one cannot sort of... The idea or the understanding is that one has to be constantly progressing. Otherwise, you'd be, the whole thing just goes to nothing. You know, and it's for a devotee to be victimized by these thoughts. And so it's a pretty heavy thing.
Yeah, it's to see a devotee in a position where the devotee has fallen victim to greed in particular, which is the emphasis in this particular verse. So greed for satisfying the senses. So that means that one is shifted to that plane of mental, the mental plane, and one isn't actually keeping one's focus on the meditation of Lord Vishnu in the heart, and one isn't keeping one's senses properly engaged in loving service to Krishna. So it's that terrible shift that that going along with the greed for satisfying the senses, which leads to the breakdown. So indeed, the listing here of what actually leaves one is, of course, the very strengths that go along with the self-satisfaction of the Brahmana. So those strengths are his education, meaning his education in Krishna consciousness, his spiritual strength, meaning staying with his practices, his austerities. You know, there comes to be a reluctance to perform austerities. And and naturally his reputation goes down, because once one is actually been practicing for a long time, a reputation is there. So all of that gets destroyed just by shifting to the mental plane and going with the greediness to satisfy the senses. Such a very dangerous thing, because yes, the whole description of the thugs assailing one.
Yeah, I was just thinking on the term there also, yeah, that important point of self-satisfaction, that if one still find oneself, especially in the position that, you know, where many of us are, that are dealing still with material desires, and as long as we entertain some of those material desires, even with the thought that, you know, there is a gradual process of, or with the understanding that it's a gradual process to become purified for those things, you know, as long as one is entertaining those things, one is in this big danger that the whole thing can be dismantle, you know, your opportunity to come to Krishna, you know, like that. I don't know, it just struck me as something quite quite heavy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the maintaining of material desires, I mean, Srila Prabhupada states it in one sentence, what the antidote to it, and he calls it the best advice. That's his statement, is the satisfaction of having just the bare necessities of life. So it seems almost contradictory that you counteract those strong material pushes with the satisfaction with the bare necessities, because the material desires are calling for more and more and more. And here the antidote is satisfaction with the bare minimum. So it seems, how do you reconcile the two? Well, it becomes very easy to do just by virtue of keeping one's senses connected to the loving service of Krishna. It becomes not an issue anymore. It's not an issue. It falls away completely. So then it's just natural that one is seeing whatever is coming to one as connected to Krishna, and one is valuing everything. One's giving the proper value and putting everything to the proper use. And there's satisfaction because it requires thought, it requires effort, even to look after the few things that one is given. And then maintaining them properly. Everything requires a lot of effort, thought, and time. So the satisfaction comes in doing that properly. So where is the space to be thinking, need to acquire this, need to acquire that? And even if the on the mental plane there's some ideas that, you know, one has an image of oneself as possessing X amount of things, even if it's that's there, you know, one pushes it aside and focuses on what Krishna's kindly provided to one. And there's natural satisfaction. It's not even an issue. So when you talk about maintaining, it means that you're pushing aside your practices. That's what maintaining really means. So you don't maintain that. It's there, but you're kicking it aside because of all the effort that is involved in maintaining what Krishna is providing. So those necessities that are being provided and the possessions that are being provided, just the effort involved in caring for it, using it properly, understanding how to even use on the subtle plane what's being given to one, you know, one's education, how to use that properly in service. All of that is extremely satisfying. So you can't really even talk about maintaining material desires. No, they're not really being maintained. One may be conscious of it there, but they're not really being maintained once you've made that connection with putting your senses in loving service to Krishna. Because your whole being goes into that.
Yeah, definitely. It becomes definitely like a compulsory. Especially in the situation that if you are still if have some material desires, it's compulsory for us to be constantly engaged in devotional service. Any little entertaining, then, you know, it's dangerous. It's dangerous because it can sort of give entrance to a thought. It's not a good arrangement, you know.
Yes, one is vigilant.
Yeah.
And it's actually a happy vigilance.
Yeah.
It's a very satisfying vigilance. It's not a hardship. Because there's so much satisfaction that comes through practicing a so-called austerity of being vigilant. There's happiness with that. And it's the duty of, these particular verses, the emphasis has been on the self-satisfied brahmana. So it's a duty of the brahmana to actually be conscious and resist those urges. It's a duty. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.